Avrakatos was convinced that the CIA's intelligence directorate, where the analysts came from, was professionally invested in the Mujahideen's defeat. That's what they had been predicting all along and were still predicting in their papers. He tapped Duane to counter them. I could tell him, okay, we need 3 memos this morning, one to answer the Pentagon, one to answer some stupid article in the press, and one to counter our own analysts. Soon, Gust had Duane publishing a weekly Afghan update that he distributed as a top-secret document to 40 of the main policymakers at the State Department, White House, Pentagon, and inside the CIA. It showed that the Mujahideen were hurting the Russians and that they were unwilling to quit. Gust knew that if he gave these reports a high enough classification, they'd be sure to leak, which was his intention. Then there was Larry Penn, the New York Jew, a Latin America specialist. He spoke Spanish and Portuguese. He and Gust had gone through the agency's Camp Peary boot camp together, and they had both seen themselves as outsiders. Larry was the only Jew ever sent to Saudi Arabia from the Afghan program, Gust recalled. He has the map of Tel Aviv on his face, but on his visa he put down Unitarian on the line that asks about religion. Under Avrakatos, the balding, bug-eyed Penn was in direct charge of the Afghan war effort. He was also a lawyer, and that turned out to be immensely valuable to Gust, who was convinced that if he listened to the agency's in-house lawyers, nothing would be possible. Gust insisted that Penn double as his consigliere. Time and again, Penn would warn Avrakatos, "You'll go into the slammer for this," but then he would set about finding ways to bypass the lawyer's most recent prohibitions. "These aren't terrorist devices or assassination techniques," he would conclude. And this lovely euphemism would become the official description of a particularly lethal weapon for the Mujahideen. Penn's legal rulings were of enormous importance, since he interpreted how Avrakatos could delegate the dollar-for-dollar matching grants that the Saudis had contributed to the secret war. According to Penn, those funds were not subject to the same restrictions that guided congressional appropriations, so Gust committed $44 million of those liberated CIA-controlled funds to acquire $44 million worth of British blowpipe anti-aircraft missiles, non-Soviet weapons that otherwise would have required special authorization for the CIA to pass on to the Afghans. Moving money into the black market and through all the secret channels of the world of espionage was the special preserve of a man whom everyone called Hilly Billy. Avrakatos describes him proudly as a man with a huge chip on his shoulder. Gust knew well how easy it was to get stymied moving millions of dollars of unacknowledged funds. Have you ever tried to open an unnumbered Swiss bank account for the U.S. government? It takes 6 months because of all the red tape. The agency can do it in 4 to 6 weeks because they're good, but this guy Hilly Billy could do it in 12 hours. By late 1985, Hilly Billy would be moving $1 billion a year through those secret channels. A sign over his desk read, "War is not cheap." The man tapped to run psychological warfare was Paul Broadbent, a second-generation American who had grown up in a Russian neighborhood of Cleveland. He was the hearts and minds expert, Gust says, the kind of guy who pulls the wings off of flies, dangerous if you don't channel him properly. I told him, "The first time I see you treating any of my people mean, I'll fire you. Take it out on the Russian cocksuckers." Paul knew the Russian mind. He kept trying to get me to give him 20 portable radio stations that he could program with demoralizing psychological broadcasts. He finally got 2 portable man packs to beam stuff into the Russian troops. The problem is that none of the Mujahideen wanted to do it. They didn't think it was manly. Who would want to carry a radio transmitter when you can fire a missile? The team met at 9:30 a.m. each Monday, with Avrakatos presiding over his 14 specialists. There was one basic question: what do we need to win the war? Each guy would come in with his dream sheet. Some guys came up with real wild dream sheets. No one had any streak of mercy in him when it came to hurting the Russians. Art Alper, the grandfatherly demolitions expert, was one of the team's more idea-filled members. Along with developing demolition kits, special fuses, and new techniques to smuggle weapons and ordnance into enemy territory, he helped develop portable amplifiers and devices to spread Broadbent's psychological war. The inspiration for this effort came from North Korean radio broadcasts to U.S. troops. "Hey, G.I., we're fucking your sister." The CIA's idea was to place powerful amplifiers on hills across from Soviet garrisons. When the Mujahideen turned them on, a Russian voice would boom out, while your wives and mothers and sisters are sleeping with political commissars and you are dying on the battlefield, we Mujahideen laugh at you. Or, we Dushman, the Russian name for the Mujahideen, we herders of goats and sheep, challenge you women to come up to this hill and fight. I thought the portable broadcasts were ridiculous, but it hit my funny bone, says Avrakatos. And it did promote fear. If you get some fucking Dushman without shoes challenging you to fight, and you go up there and get bushwhacked or sniped, you realize this guy is clever. You start fearing him. Alper's amplifiers would broadcast at irregular intervals, even after the Mujahideen had left their positions. When the Soviets discovered that the equipment was on automatic pilot, it spooked them further. The Mujahideen were a more sophisticated foe than they had previously thought. Some of the other psychological war efforts weren't quite as successful. The sinister messages that Broadbent had dreamed up for leaflets rarely made their way to the Red Army troops. Each pamphlet had a different pitch. One said, "If your commanding officer is a real communist who wants you to fight many battles, frag him. Otherwise, eventually, we're going to get you." But the Mujahideen, who didn't understand the concept of propaganda, tended not to be very helpful. Avrakatos says they found it far too tempting to treat Broadbent's leaflets as if they were exotic CIA-issued toilet paper. Alper was a particularly offbeat presence in the office, with his grandfatherly face, his violent schemes, and his burgundy plaid pants. "All the secretaries saw him as a dirty old man," says Gust, "but he was a genius with mines and at demolition. I'm sure it was the first time in his life he really felt wanted." Gust was trying to promote just such a sense of belonging, in essence creating his own CIA tribe within the tribe. The heart of everything the CIA was trying to do in Afghanistan, though, was arm the Mujahideen. Here, the man Avrakatos most strongly relied on to acquire and move staggering quantities of ordnance was longtime veteran Tim Burton. Never in the agency's history had there been such a challenge for the Office of Logistics. It would be up to Burton to move millions of ammunition rounds, thousands of AK-47s, night vision goggles, medical kits, and herds of mules, all through hidden channels from a dozen countries into one of the most inaccessible lands in the world. "If you know who Radar is in MASH," Gust says, "that was Tim. In the social pecking order of the CIA, the case officer is at the top of the totem pole and the logistics people are near the very bottom. Case officers don't usually associate with the logistics men. They're known as logs pukes. People call them when the toilet breaks down. But if you really want to have a good ship, you make sure you include all your people." Avrakatos made it a point to elevate Burton to a position of status, and when he finally left his post, he passed on a piece of advice to his successor. "If you get rid of this guy, you're losing your right tit." Avrakatos still stands in wonder of Burton's mastery. "We had 50 major sources feeding information to us on a daily basis about weapons and material that we were purchasing for the Mujahideen," he said. "Tim had positioned people all over the world, in Cairo, Frankfurt, Switzerland. He could place an order, get a contract obligated, and get the weapons there in 3 months. It was fantastic. He could get 7 C-141 planes in 48 hours, something that would ordinarily take a CIA task force 4 weeks.